Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure, where we will once again battle the evil monsters of 1950s technology as they attempt to sink our ship, metaphorically.
Yes.
Yeah, that was cool anyway. Anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach is supposed to disclose something right here, which is a weird word. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio program, and I realize that you may not have even known it was a radio program. You may have thought our disembodied voices were just springing into existence somewhere. Of course, it's entirely possible that that really is what is happening.
Yes, but we may not actually exist.
Right, and you may not be listening. So anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach is also the name of an investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, based in Salado, Texas. It's registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission as its primary regulator. And it's not coincidental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no coincidence here?
No. It's not coincident. It is, in fact, an affiliate. We are affiliated with them.
We are the same people.
The same principles. We're not like, we don't own like all of it or anything.
No.
So, if you would like, but since this is the radio program and not the investment advisory firm, although they are in fact very much the same thing, and today is October 24th of the year 2015, presuming all of those things are true, and the first ones at least are true on October 24th, 2015, then you may give us a telephone call, and we will be on the air live and in living color.
No color. It's radio.
I'm looking at color right here in front of me.
But they will not be able to see the living color.
Their radio, I've never seen a truly non-colored radio.
It's true. The color on the radio is there for you to
it's
see.
It's real.
It is real. You're right. I will retract my statement.
It's not
we
like
are
it's
live
just,
and in living color.
It's not like it's shades of gray or something, you know, with no color. Unless, of course, the person involved is totally colorblind, but that is a very insignificant portion of the population.
I have a question for you. Is gray a color?
Actually, it's not.
I would say it is.
No, it's a combination of all colors.
I would say it's a color. I think all colors are a combination of all colors.
No, actually, I don't think it's a color. I think it is simply light and dark, which is different from color. Color is a variance of that.
A variance of light and dark, which is what gray is, a variance.
Which is like saying, are radio waves light wave? Yeah, they're both electromagnetic.
So all I'm saying is that black and white TV, black and white are both colors. So when we switch to color TV...
There actually was no black and white, it's just shades.
I know many people that think that black is their favorite color or that white is their favorite color. So I'm just saying that there seems to be some color problems going on in our culture.
But I think that's a misnomer.
Yes.
You know her?
Yeah, she's a very confused person.
Right, indeed. Anyway, there are telephones here, and they are the traditional landline telephones for you people who are of newer generation and are unfamiliar with those. They actually have copper wires and stuff like that.
They come out of walls.
It's really weird, and you can't take it very far, and
the coils
doesn't
on
have any pictures right. on it or anything. But the telephones are in here, and... Well, actually, one telephone with a whole bunch of lines on it. I guess they're called... Actually, we call them lines. They're actually those buttons with lights above them.
Right.
And the telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, if you're in East Bell County, is 773-1400 or...
1-866-597-1400. Anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
Why is it the phone little lights above the phone buttons don't light up when we say that?
Because it is apparent to me that no one is calling.
I am apparent to you.
Yes, you are apparently apparent to
me. Yes, I am. So that
he is my father.
That. Yeah. Yes.
Say, Jake, I am your father. So it's appropriate.
Jake, I am your father.
Right, but you're not supposed to cut my hand off in the process. That would make it an uncomfortable relationship.
You know, there are some people who have no idea what you're talking about.
Not very many.
not very many, Luke.
Those few that don't know what we're talking about probably shouldn't be listening.
I should have named you Luke instead of Jake.
I could talk with a deep voice. Go.
You could do that anyway. It would cause people to be even more, or by more I mean less, impressed with our program.
Really? Okay. Well,
so what's happened this week?
Tech stalwarts drive market surge.
China Central Bank sees very normal growth.
Damage control missed RMD for missed RMDs. Well, you weren't ready for that one, were you?
We're just reading really great and dismal science-oriented headlines.
I was...
It's funny because the headlines that we read are really not headlines. They are back page lines.
They're sort of like footnotes. Yeah, and dog footnotes.
Right, dog footnotes.
Well, let's see. What happened this year is NASDAQ leads the U.S. rally on rate cut talk overseas. Man, where do they come up with this stuff? Basically, what the guy who wrote that, whose name was Vito Racanelli.
Uh-huh.
Vito.
Right.
Give me a headline. I can't. That was bad. Okay. What happened during the week is the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 2.5%. The S&P 500 was up 2.07. Therefore, better yet, the NASDAQ was up 2.97. Therefore, the NASDAQ won the competition this week.
Was it a race?
Obviously, but we don't know what race it was. It was a competition, a sports competition.
Yeah. So as of Friday, those numbers, just Friday, NASDAQ was up 2.27% on one day. That's, you're looking at pre-year 2000 type growth rate there.
That's pretty cool. However, for the year to date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 0.99%. while the S&P 500 is up 0.79%. Isn't that exciting?
I am not sure that very many people find that exciting. I find it exciting.
And the NASDAQ year-to-date is down 6.25%. The key here, you have to pick which one of these you're going to stay sane. I like the S&P. I don't like the S&P 500, but it's the one I follow. And it was up about 2% for the week. It was up 1% yesterday. It's up less than 1% for the year. But from my perspective, and I suspect from our perspective, that's really exciting. Why is it really exciting? It's really exciting because we got really, really tired of it being down for the year. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And this is the fascinating thing to me. When the market took a nosedive in August, there was primarily one reason given in the media by the traders were interviewed by members of the news media, and the traders who supposedly have their finger on the pulse of these things said it was down because we suspect economic activity in China has slowed. Remember that?
Yep. Yep. Now, we suspect economic activity in China has slowed, and last week I talked about how it hadn't actually slowed. That the growth rate was not as fast as it was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't increasing the growth rate as fast.
Yeah, they did come in instead of growing at 7% per year, they grew at 6.9.
Right. They're still accelerating. They're still growing fast.
They didn't actually grow at 6.9. Of course, they didn't actually grow at 7 either. But the interesting thing to me was, And I really do find this interesting, the reason the traders, presumably the same traders,
the market went up.
The market went up yesterday because the Chinese central bank
is lowering interest rates.
Lowered interest rates across the board and decreased the reserve requirement for Chinese banks because they officially acknowledged that the Chinese economy is slowing down. So what happened
is, at least the growth rate is slowing.
The growth rate is slowing. Yes, and so the issue is that the market went down because people suspected the Chinese economy might be slowing, and it has since jumped 11% because of the news that the Chinese economy is slowing.
Yeah, that's not the news, but that's what people are interpreting the news to me.
Anyway,
yeah.
Well, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Well?
Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning. I apologize. I forgot the name of it, but there's this governmental agency that acts sort of like an escrow agent between multinational corporations, so it's easy to facilitate purchases. Mm-hmm. And there was some controversy about they were going to eliminate it.
The import-export
bank, I didn't understand why. I was just curious if you could sort of explain that to lay people.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, we've talked about this a bit in the past, and it's one of the things that we enjoy talking about because it really has it has no reason to be shut down.
Oh, yes, yes. Ideologically, it has a wonderful reason to be shut down.
Really?
Ideologically. But economically, there is no reason whatsoever to shut it down.
What the Import-Export Bank is a bank, as the caller said, that processes loans for companies that are either exporting or importing, which is why it's called the Import-Export Bank. I realize that sometimes in economics we use really esoteric terms, and sometimes we just say, yes, we're going to call this bank the Export-Import Bank because it's a bank that does export-import loans. So that's why we named it that. It was named for...
Yeah, well, you know, you never can tell.
Well, Congress passed a law years and years back that said, yes, this is a good idea to have. It will be funded by the loans that it gives. It will be getting loans mm-hmm. from deposits
right.
put on the bank. It's not taxpayer money. This is money that corporations put on deposit there. Just like another bank mm-hmm. anywhere else. They make loans out of that. They charge interest rates. Now, it's backed by the government in that some of the loans that are made are loans that other banks wouldn't mm-hmm. make because when you're dealing with a foreign country, a lot of other banks don't want to touch that.
What?
Well, it lapsed. Its authority lapsed in July, the 1st of July 2015, because Congress didn't extend its authority.
But more specifically, there are about 39 members of the House of Representatives who blocked the bill from passing in the House.
Yeah.
It was passed by the Senate, and the Freedom Caucus blocked it in the House. And it's complicated how they blocked it. But here's the issue, what the Import-Export Bank does, in essence. For example, several American corporations, including Caterpillar and Schlumberger and a series of major manufacturers in the United States, for example. And I think this was the trigger that set all this off. Loaned a very substantial amount of money to Brazil to PBAS, it's called, which is the Brazilian oil extraction and stuff. Company. Basically, they have a monopoly on dealing with oil in Brazil. And they had this big offshore oil field, and these American companies came in and said, we will supply the equipment and do all the, you know, all the stuff here, and you'll pay us a whole bunch of money. Well, Brazil doesn't have the highest credit rating in the world. And the only way that they were going to be able to afford to have American companies go in and do this and buy the equipment is to get a loan. Well, it's just standard procedure in a case like this. And nobody would give them a loan. So the Export-Import Bank loaned Brazil a great deal of money. But this is the key. That money never left the United States. It went straight to the companies in the United States that manufactured the equipment. And it got into the blogosphere, the conservative blogosphere, that the United States was loaning money to Brazil to drill for oil in competition with American drillers.
Totally wrong. So that's one end of the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the other end of the political spectrum, the extreme left.
Okay.
They hate the Import-Export Bank, too, the Export-Import Bank.
Mm.
They hate it with a passion. In fact, if you recall, which is really hard because we're talking almost a decade ago, rounded up, when Barack Obama was running for president, for the first time.
That was a long time ago.
He gave a series of speeches on how he would ban the Export-Import Bank
mm-hmm.
because it was stealing jobs right. from Americans.
I was unaware of that, but I will accept that.
Since, once he became president, he said, oh, that's a really bad idea to get rid of that because
it would cost Americans a lot of jobs.
A lot of jobs.
Yeah, and...
And so he's now a supporter. Well, you've got the extreme right and the extreme left.
Who agree. On most things,
yes. And when you find something that they agree on, then that's the thing that I disagree with them on, usually.
And that's, I know that both sides would be absolutely, both extreme left and extreme, by the way, the extreme left, I found out the name for them. Did I interrupt you? Did I interrupt
you? No, you interrupted yourself.
Okay. I found out a name. We have the Freedom Caucus on the right, and I actually had to hunt around and try to find. I'm sure there's something on the left that is the equivalent of that that's just as insane, and it is. It's called Move On Democrats.
Yes.
And they're just nuts. And Occupy Democrats. And they have a caucus in the House of Representatives. And this is the funny thing. If you go down very carefully and analyze their positions, then you go over to the Freedom Caucus and analyze their positions, they call them different things, but they're almost identical. That's what's amazing to me.
Let me say, we're back to the export-import bank. One thing. There's a whole series of things that have happened because that bank exists. One of them is the Pan-American Road. The road that goes
from the highway.
It's Pan-American Highway. It goes from Alaska all the way down to the southern tip of South America. Not South Africa. That's a big trip. It's a very large bridge.
Talking about a bridge to nowhere.
Yeah. It was completed in 1980. The upkeep on it, though, has fallen apart because there's no institution that is promoting transportation there. So anytime you listen to this program, you hear us talking about free trade being a really important factor in the culture of America. When we are dominant as a culture, it's because we believe very strongly in free trade. We don't, unless you're in a union, believe that keeping all trade in America is a good idea. The reason is because as we get more technically proficient here, as our education rates go up, as our standard of living goes up, there are things that we don't do anymore. We don't, in the United States, have a lot of people working at sewing shoes together in factories.
We don't?
No.
We used to.
We used to have a lot of people that did that. They would sit and they would sew shoes together. Mm-hmm. We don't do that here anymore. We ship that overseas because we're way too educated. Even if you're a high school dropout, you're too educated to sew a Nike logo on repeatedly all day long. There are other things that you can do that are better uses of your time that will pay you more.
That used to be a primary occupation in New England.
Yes. Shoemaking. And then it got shipped to the South, and then it got shipped from the South over into Mexico, and then it got shipped into Asia, and it's being shipped around Asia. As the education levels rise in each country, mm-hmm. people have better uses of their time. So free trade is really important. There was a time way back in the feudal system that people thought the manor could stand alone. You would have all of the things that you needed in life grown in one spot. Well, the problem with that is you don't get music, you don't get art, and you don't get any of the other innovations that are being done on the other manors. So we start trading between the manors, and the standard of living comes up. So the manors become a state, and the state becomes a larger state and becomes a country, and they start fighting with each other on country levels. So as it gets bigger and bigger, some people call this globalization. Well, it is in a sense, but it's the same kind of globalization as when we were using cowrie shells to trade for flint when we were running around with sticks and stones. The ability to trade for goods at a good rate, to have your goods valued and to value the goods of others is the most important factor in the culture of the United States. Now, there's groups in the United States that want to stop that. Two extreme groups. One left, the left, and one right. That want to stop that. They want to say, don't go anywhere else in the world, stay in America. Yeah. Or they want to say, don't hire anyone else in the world, stay in America. Please understand that the idea of buying local is a great idea. It's a wonderful idea, and it does boost the local economy. Unless you're spending more for something that is available at a higher quality for less money, then all you're doing is supporting someone who is not able to compete. And if you think about that for a second, if you have a child in your house, and the child moves out, goes to college, and comes back and says, I can't get a job anywhere because nobody's going to buy my stuff. I'm building these things that it's more expensive and it takes me longer, but since you're my parent, you can buy them from me. And if you're the mayor, you can say nobody in town can buy anything but my products. You can see where that's a very restrictive thing. It's a very simple example, but that's what the idea is in tariffs. We have this idea that, well, these people are our people. Even if they're inefficient and unable to compete with the rest of the world, we should buy their stuff and nobody else's. If we continue as Americans to make the best stuff in the world when we make stuff, then that's not a problem. But if we're enforcing bad quality purchases in the United States, that's a major problem. And one of the things that the Export-Import Bank allows us to do is have trade that is balanced in favor of us of United States purchasing, so that when other countries are trying to buy from us and they have tariffs where they're saying we only purchase from ourselves, well, we step in and with an export-import bank and we say, well, we will help facilitate a cheap loan to allow those tariffs to be bypassed. In a lot of cases, an export-import bank bypasses tariffs with their loans. Mm-hmm. Because they're giving the loan directly to the country in question, which then disseminates it on to their corporations. So the tariff gets bypassed. It's like a free trade agreement without a free trade agreement.
It's a backdoor trade.
You shut it down, all you're doing is increasing inefficiency in both markets.
Let me make that a little clearer. It's not like, for instance, we loan money to Brazil. Brazil gives money to one of its corporations. We technically, for example, in the case of the oil drilling equipment for Brazil, we technically loaned it to Brazil.
Who loaned it to a company who paid it to an American company, but it never left the United States.
In fact, what happened was the Export-Import Bank loaned the money to Schlumberger and Caterpillar in the United States, and Schlumberger and Caterpillar hired more people to build all the equipment.
Right.
Now, the ideology behind this is, quote, and this is...
The ideology behind it not... being
behind
around.
The people against the Export-Import Bank is the government shouldn't be involved in that.
It's only involved in cases where other governments are getting in the way.
And it's the point is that, in fact, nobody else wants to touch it.
Yeah.
And it is a role of government to facilitate trade overseas. And
it's the role of government to protect trade overseas as well.
Which is, by the way... We've elected, for instance, George W. Bush ran as a very strong conservative, and he was. Richard Nixon ran as a conservative, and he was. Ronald Reagan ran as a conservative, and he was. All of them, during their campaign, at some point, said they would abolish the Commerce Department.
Right. And all of them said, whoa, that's a really bad idea when they got into office.
Once they got there, they realized that just as the Chamber of Commerce in a local community gets out, which is many cases funded by the local government, gets out there and promotes business activity in the community and promotes people bringing jobs into the community and basically advocates at the business level and sometimes finances at the business level in a community. The Commerce Department of the United States does exactly the same thing. And was it the Commerce Department that Rick Perry couldn't remember that he was going to abolish?
I'm not sure. I can't remember what he couldn't remember.
I know he said there were three different.
Right, and he couldn't remember which they were. They were already abolished in his brain, I think.
Okay, but the fact is that the Export-Import Bank, without the Export-Import Bank, Boeing has stated they're going to have to move production into Canada.
There's another big one.
Microsoft, by the way, who had an interesting report, knocked the ball out of the park with their earnings report. One of the reasons the market went up, has stated that if we don't get the export-import, we need two things. One, he said, the Microsoft has said, either we get the Export-Import Bank back and you allow more foreigners to come in who we need to fill jobs when we can't find people in the United States to fill them, or we're going to start moving to Canada. I mean, it's not very far from where they are to Canada. Canada has higher taxes. Canada has a lot of things that don't make it quite as business friendly. But the bottom line to it is, if you're going to compete internationally,
you need an export-import bank.
And you're going to compete at the scale of very, very large companies like Boeing and Microsoft.
General Electric.
And General Electric and Schlumberger and Caterpillar.
Here's a big one. In January, President Obama went to India and met with the Prime Minister Modi there and set up a deal, a $2 billion deal with the Export-Import Bank to allow General Electric and several other major companies to go in and begin creating nuclear power plants. I don't see any problem with any of that. Except India has a law on the books that was there because of the Union Carbide disaster that says if there is a disaster that your company is in any way related to, they can try you in absentia and hold you for capital crimes. So if a nuclear power plant fails because of a terrorist attack or because of an earthquake or because of any number of other things, then the CEO of General Electric could be arrested if he ever gets anywhere near India.
So
it isn't the case when the Export-Import Bank makes the loan.
Got it.
It allows the laws of the United States to cover the corporation in the event of fraud or bankruptcy. And we've got good laws for that. And the Indians accept it as long as we do it through the Export-Import Bank. So those projects are not going forward. And they're big projects. And they're projects that allow us to stay at the front of the nuclear race. Well, guess what? Our great friend Putin has been talking to Modi about nuclear reactors recently. So do we want to give the nuclear reactor business of the world to Russia?
Well,
to France?
No, I think the Russians should. If the Russians get it, they have so much experience with building Chernobyl-style reactors.
Right. So, what is our history of problems? Nothing. That's over in Ukraine. That was them. They are all the bad.
Which was part of Russia at the time.
Well, it is now part of Russia again.
They want peace.
We want peace of Ukraine. We want peace of United States.
By the way.
Da. Peace of the world. Peace of all the world.
On a totally poor segue, but speaking of Russia, I think it's fascinating. They are moving ground troops. I think we have some peculiarities going on here. Let me see if I can fix it. They are moving ground troops. This is absolutely fascinating. Listen very carefully. They are moving two battalions.
Russians.
Russian battalions that aren't in Ukraine.
They're not in Ukraine.
From Ukraine to Syria. these
troops are not in Ukraine, but they're moving from Ukraine to Syria.
Two Russian armored infantry battalions, mechanized infantry battalions, that are not in Ukraine are moving from Ukraine to Syria, which I guess means
they're moving from not Ukraine to Syria.
Well, what happens is they're not in Ukraine, which means since they're moving from Ukraine, I guess that means they're somewhere in Russia and they have to go to Ukraine.
Right.
And then to get to Syria.
Yeah. And there's another little piece
here.
Well,
that actually makes sense because Crimea is the jump-off point when they load on ships.
Yeah, it makes sense. So
they kind of transition through Ukraine to Crimea, which the Russians would never say. But this is a funny thing. They announced that officially.
Right. And when Putin also had an interesting statement on Thursday. He said that the West was playing with matches because they were pitting terrorists against terrorists in Syria. And he was referring to the rebels. And in referring to the rebels, he was saying pitting terrorists against terrorists. And I was reading it because I don't understand Russian. And as I was reading it, as he's going along, I was laughing because it's Hezbollah is funded by Iran, which gets the funding that it's funding Hezbollah from Russia in a lot of cases, weapons and so on. Okay, so one hypocrisy there. The West is playing with matches and pitting terrorists against terrorists.
Right.
Yesterday, he said that Russians will work in concert with the same rebels that the Americans are supporting from here on, some of them in airstrikes. So these are the people that the day before he was calling terrorists that yesterday he's now... So this is very Putin.
The Russians
moving from not Ukraine to Syria to fight terrorists that aren't terrorists anymore, that might be helping terrorists that aren't possibly terrorists.
Now, the Russians also publicized something this week I thought was pretty fascinating. It's buried deep in Reuters news feed. I kind of stumbled across it, and so I started following it and see what was happening. The equivalent of the Speaker of the House in Russia, the Speaker of the Duma, was on a
the Doom Speaker, no Duma Speaker.
Duma Speaker was on a small diplomatic jet. I don't know what a diplomatic jet looks like, but
it's a jet with a smile on its face.
Okay, but it's a Russian jet,
right?
And
in that case, it's a jet with a lot of weapons on it.
And he reported that as he was flying across France, that French aircraft had harassed this jet.
This diplomatic jet.
And almost collided with it. And so big stink went up, and the French ambassador was called in Moscow to the governmental, to the Kremlin, and was chewed out very thoroughly, and they threatened to stop, to put sanctions against France. And
more sanctions.
It really... No, they don't actually have any sanctions against France right now, but they...
Yeah, they're not buying any produce.
Well, other than that, they were very, very upset about it, and the French carefully investigated, and to the best of their knowledge, they hadn't sent any jets to do anything like this, so they came back and said, well, we didn't do that, and there was a big argument about it, and finally, after it hit the news, the Swiss said, that aircraft was coming into Switzerland, and yes, we did send an F-18, and yes, it took a look at the aircraft, because when somebody shows up crossing into Switzerland, and they claim to be something, we go take a look at it.
Whoops, well, you weren't in France. Russians are really good at not knowing where they're flying.
It really wasn't a French jet, it was a Swiss jet, and you were flying into Switzerland at the time, not into France.
And all these countries look alike.
And so the French ambassador and the foreign minister of Russia formally apologized to each other.
Well, I'm very sorry for yelling at you for stuff, and I'm very sorry for yelling at you. Oh, yes. Very good.
But this is what I thought was funniest about the entire thing. So the guy who is this very close friend of Vladimir, Vlad the Horrible, was very, very offended by the fact that he saw a jet fighter out his window.
Right. I might be offended too if I was
as long as it was a French jet fighter, they were going to protest horribly. Once they found out it was a Swiss jet fighter,
they said, "Oh, never mind.
No, we're not going to complain to the Swiss."
The Swiss have a single finger salute that they respond with in many cases like that. They say, "We are neutral," and by that we mean go away.
And the commentary I read was kind of interesting because you can fly into France. You can fly into France all day long. They will never send a jet fighter to check you out. The fact is that any aircraft that is not a regularly scheduled commercial flight that they know in advance exactly what it is and where it is, and sometimes even then, will have a Swiss fighter intercept it as it enters French airspace, if it's
in Swiss airspace.
So, I mean, before it enters Swiss airspace, because they can fly all over Europe.
Right.
And the reason was, they said they are concerned about that there could be another aircraft shadowing, like underneath it, on the radar. And so they routinely go check them out. And the people who listen to this radio program, if there is anyone.
I don't think there are. So I'm not listening either.
Tend to be of the socioeconomic group from which I hail, which is the Scots-Irish, the people who sort of originated the concept of you can have my gun when you pry it out of my cold, dead fingers. This is one of those things which, by the way, one of my daughters doesn't like me to hear, doesn't like to hear from me, but one of the lowest violent murder rates on the planet is in Switzerland.
One of the second lowest violent murder rates is in Norway.
But
the,
in
both of them have mandatory gun ownership laws. Yeah, you've got to own a gun.
It's funny. If you've ever served in the Swiss military, you have an automatic rifle, you know, like one that you can turn into a machine gun by flipping a switch.
Right.
Every member, after you've served, and they have mandatory service for all males, after you finish your service, you're in an inactive reserve. You have to attend a certain amount of training. You're required to keep a fully automatic rifle and a semi-automatic pistol in your home for the rest of your life, basically, along with enough ammunition to fight a war. And they have, their gun murder rate is one of the lowest in the world because, very simply, a criminal can...
home intrusion is not probably a very good idea.
It's not just home intrusion. The whole point is, of course, if you'll notice where these mass murders are taking place.
Uh-huh.
Schools.
Yep.
And
gun-free zones.
Check, it's always a gun-free zone.
Yeah.
And I just think it is... There's a really good argument there against the cries for greater gun controls. Now, I will admit, though, now this is another point. In Switzerland, you must register a firearm.
Yep.
And you can't just go down and buy one because you feel like it. They will run a very thorough background check on you, and you can't buy one until you pass the background check.
Mm-hmm.
The thing on that subject, I just had an opinion on that subject, is very simple, and I heard it from a political candidate the other day say the same thing. Why is it that we allow in the United States criminals, known felons, and mentally ill people legally to buy firearms? But did you know that we do?
Yeah, there's some...
As long as they don't do it...
Still some certain areas that they can do it. Yeah.
As long as they... 60% of firearms are sold at gun shows and
gun shows, they do have the background check.
Well, there's places where you can go buy, and that's...
You
that's
can,
a nice
private
loophole.
Purchase.
I would like to have that one.
Yeah, private purchase is where they can still purchase it legally.
Mm. Gun shows, they do the background?
They have...
So they can't sell it?
That's they
for
have,
72 hours?
Yeah, they can sell. They do a background check. But the background check is instant. It was based on a 72-hour thing, but the background check is instant now.
Anyway, the whole point is...
Or semi-instant. Sometimes it takes 5 minutes.
There's actually a sanity check here that would work really, really well with existing laws and some very minor changes. And this is the fascinating thing to me. Bernie Sanders supports no further restrictive gun laws.
Yep.
That's, to me, fascinating.
Yeah, this is... there's an economic study that I talk about regularly, and that is it was done by Duke University, and the study was on how we are not rational about our political beliefs, and the right wing is not rational about climate change, and the left wing is not rational about gun control.
Oh, there's not any climate change,
and that's the point. The Duke presented both sides with both sets of data, and because our political views might be infringed, we decide that data is incorrect when there's no other evidence that says it's incorrect. And in the case of the left wing, they don't like guns because guns are involved in shootings. It's amazing how that works, huh?
And they don't like shootings. And
so
by making guns illegal and you can't have guns in certain
areas, only makes criminals have guns.
And anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We've got to do some commercials. Telephone numbers in here. On the other side of the commercials, if you'd like to give us a call, are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And of course, all that is dependent on today being Saturday, October 24th, 2015. If it's some other date, you can call all you want to, but we won't answer. So we'll be back after these important words from Town Square sponsors. Back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake McClure.
And you got that your Jake was really unduly enthusiastic, I think.
Jake. Very Jake. Yes.
I'm your father, Luke.
Anyway, off on a slightly different subject, Mark Zandi. And I'm sure you guys get excited when you hear the name of the rock star, Mark Zandi.
Rock being geological, not the music.
Actually,
economic.
Mark Zandi's a really moody guy.
He writes for Moody's.
He's the chief economist at Moody's Analytics. And he has this astonishing habit of being correct. He's through the economic indigestion that we had in 2008 and 2009. He was very, very consistently right in what he said was going to happen next and how it would work out and which way we should go. And at any rate, so he, on October 12th, made another, published another commentary, and he said that the U.S. economy remains on track to return to full employment by mid-2016. And he also suggested that that would then cause wages to start to rise, which would cause the people who have the rising wages, since they have largely paid down their debts, to start buying things, which would encourage the Fed to start raising rates and get us back somewhere into, I guess, what you would call normalcy. And we basically, he uses a series of graphs and charts and things that economists use, but I tend to agree with him. And so this is, actually, I agree with him because he agrees with me, and anybody who agrees with me is obviously quite smart. And so we look forward to 2016 being an exceptional year. A couple of other things. I mentioned this back in August, but I like to pat myself on the back here. Bill Gross, the guy who used to run PIMCO Total Return and things of that nature, who's called a bond maven. Now, I don't know what a maven is.
I know what a maven is.
What is it?
Maven is referred to as one with lots of connections, one who is connected to lots of things.
So he's connected to lots of bonds? He's thoroughly bonded?
Yes, he's thoroughly bonded.
That's what glue does. It bonds.
Yes.
Anyway, maybe that's why he's just really sticky. Anyway, the guy who left PIMCO in a huff.
Who just sued PIMCO. Or began the lawsuit
against
PIMCO for
defamation or something.
Illegal firing or getting him out. And
anyway, I don't have a lot of respect for him.
Except
for one thing. The guy has been the most amazing anti-market indicator I think I've seen in my decades.
He calls the bottom every time by saying there's a lot further to go.
If
you just wait for him to say there's a lot further to go, that's usually where the bottom is.
Yes, and in 2002 in August, he said, the market has a lot further to fall. Don't be faked out. This is not a bottom. And, of course, the market went up a lot from there. And in 2009, I think it was in May.
He said the market's going to fall a lot more.
The Dow's got to fall another 600 points before you should invest. And, of course, the market went up from there. And then, of course, this year, I think it was in early September, he stated that the market is a long ways to fall to get to normalcy.
Right.
Now, the other guy that of course, that means the market was going to do very well. The other guy who I use as a contraindicator, and I really like him for that, I mean, in the sense that I think he's silly, but he's delightfully silly, is John Bogle. Now, John Bogle is really, really has a cult following of people who think he is the ultimate market guru. When I say a cult following, they have a complete convention of Bogleheads each year, and that's where he was recently speaking. And what he said was, the next decade will be horrible for equity investors. That a person who has a reasonably balanced portfolio will, if they don't use an advisor and they don't pay any expenses and have extremely low load and they do everything in the most miserly fashion they can, will be lucky to get a return of 4% a year for the next 10 years. Now, that's sort of depressing until you realize this is the same guy in 1999 who forecast that getting a 12 8% return in for investors for the next decade would be normal. By the way, if you started in late 1999, your return over the next decade was a negative number.
He's really good at predicting the last decade.
He's done, all he does is just say,
this decade we've had this, so I'm going to predict it for the next decade.
And his logic sounds so impressive until you realize all the assumptions that he's thrown in there. But the point is, I love it when he comes out and says something very, very clearly, and it's carried all over in interviews, and that means the opposite is going to happen. It doesn't absolutely mean that. But I'm kind of excited about the fact that when Bill Gross and John Bogle both agree...
It's a pretty good counter-indicator.
That over the next 10 years, we're going to have really, really lousy returns in the equity markets. Man, is that ever a buy signal? And so I'm actually looking forward to see what happens over the next 10 years. And I have a tendency to think things will do better going forward. People have accused me of being unreasonably, for now about 33 years, I have been accused of being unreasonably optimistic and by quite a number of people. And when I recently had a guy tell me that, and who I was at a social event, he listens to the radio show apparently occasionally or hears about it or something. And I said, why do you say so? And he said, well, you know, markets have gone down a lot. And I said, yeah. When I started being unreasonably optimistic, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was breaking through 1,000 on the upside. It's a little higher today than it was 33 years ago, so was my optimism unfounded? And he really didn't have an answer for that, so I just go with there. Lot of good news. I realize that it's probably going to bore you to tears if I do nothing but tell you good news.
Yes, we need to scare you about something. We did a lot of talk about Russia. Russia's scary. Now we can go on with good news.
Well, housing industry appears to be doing exceptionally well. Is that? I know that. Let me find the. I'm looking. I've got the actual. No, okay, here's the housing data. There's indicators in the housing industry. The housing industry traditionally has been sort of a cornerstone of the American economy's recovery, and it has really stunk. It was the cornerstone of everything falling apart recently. But here's what's going on right now. This is the week of October 19th, which is sort of this week. The builder sentiment, which is really important. That's basically the builders looking at what's going on. They do the survey goes out. And they have a reading of 64, which doesn't sound like much until you realize that 50 is, if it's below 50, it's negative. It's above 50, it's positive. 64 is pretty outstanding. Basically, it's 10 point. It was 54 a year ago. It's 64 now. Housing permits. Now, this is residential housing, okay? Single-family residential housing. 1.1 million just reported. 8.3% higher than a year ago.
Right.
Housing starts, 1.2 million, very consistent, 13.3% higher than a year ago. Home price index up 5.6%. Home sales up 8.3%. This is good news stuff. This is sustainable.
Right. And I've got one more thing before the end of the hour. Let me throw this out there because I've been talking about this for a long time. We've been talking about this for a long time, that there is a cap on prices for commodities because our technology is getting better and better on how we mine it, where we get it, and so on. There's an asteroid mining company named Planetary Resources that has just raised $12 million. They are beginning the process of putting small craft into orbit to create larger craft out of the resources that they mine from asteroids, getting the fuel for it there and getting the building material for the craft that will bring it back actually from the asteroid.
That's exciting.
And now I'm not suggesting that anybody purchase this company because it's usually the first ones that fail miserably, but the technology is there and people are looking for it. So we're about out of time for this hour, though.
And you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach in the first hour. We'll be coming back second hour. This is October 24th. If you'd like to give us a call and talk to a voicemail this weekend or a live person during the week, you can call
947-1111. You can also reach that same line toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to podcasts, see our ugly mugs, see our beautiful staff. You can listen to us more next hour.
Balance, your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.